Do you have any teaching philosophies that you follow in your classroom, Ellie?
Yes, I do. The main ones that I do is just try. That's actually the one that I say to all my kids. I'm like, just try. Even if it's wrong, even if you don't do it perfectly, just give it a go. I think that's the main one that I definitely do. What I do with them is we're in Spain and I'm also trying to learn Spanish. We're supposed to only speak in English, but I speak in a little bit of English and then a little bit of Spanish as well. But I will speak Spanish, I will just try. And just to show them, even though I'm not saying it perfectly, you can understand me. I let them correct me to show them, like, it's okay if you make mistakes in other languages, it's not that bad. Like, I'm still here. And then the other one, kind of similar, but it's just little by little. Again, because I think a lot of the kids get very frustrated that they can't speak English perfectly. And the first lessons that I had, they were very disparaging about their abilities and their skills. And they're like, oh, but I can't speak anything. I'm doing bad in my exams. Yeah, I just said to them again, it's just little by little. You just had to keep doing little bits by little bits. So even if we're listening to like an audio clip or a video and they don't understand anything, I'll just say, even if you understand two words, that's good. You started somewhere. And then before you know it, you'll recognize three and then four and then five and then whole sentences. The two things that I try to stick to in my class.
Yeah, those are wonderful philosophies to incorporate into your classrooms. And I love how you have put yourself as the example. You have made, like, I am making an effort to learn Spanish so you guys can make the effort to learn English. So that's what it's all about. Interesting stuff. And have you faced challenges while teaching? And what did you learn from any of them?
This is the first time that I have taught classes of this size. My background was special needs. So that's classes of maybe maximum like 8, 10. So to then go from a class of 10 to trying to manage a class of 25, 30 kids, it's quite a big jump. And I had no idea what I was doing at the beginning and trying to manage everybody and trying to cater to everyone as well, make sure that everyone is included. That was a big challenge. I'm still learning that, to be honest. And a lot of group activities and a lot of games is how I get around. Discipline is quite a big thing because when you don't speak the same language, things get lost in translation a little bit of trying to, establish rules and behaviors that you do and don't like. And the kids know and they will take the mick of it a little bit because they know that you don't understand some of the things that they're saying. So again, that's been a bit of a challenge. But again, it's just trying to keep them as active as possible and just not giving them an excuse to run all about the place and cause a ruckus kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I completely hear you loud and clear with that. With having large classes could be a bit complex, but that's really interesting about your experience working with children that are in special needs to now students. Do you employ warm-ups or introductions in your classes? If you do, would you like to share some with our audience?
Yes, I know. I always do. Just to like set the tone of the lesson. The main one that I do is I will literally write down the topic or a keyword that we're learning for the day and just get them to either talk about it or go up and write different words, different sentences. And it helps them start get them like thinking about what they want to do or what they already know. Like it's a good way to see if there's stuff that they already know. So I'm not there going over some information that is not new to them. Quiz, they love a good quiz.
Feel a bit pressure, like, oh, we have a quiz to take. Oh no, but that's really awesome that.
It's not like an exam quiz. It's, the website called Sporkle. It's Sporcle. It's got all kinds of quizzes on there. I'll find one that's vaguely related to the topic. I did a lesson on climate change. There was a quiz about like the top 25 most polluting countries in the world. So you get them all to think about those countries. And I had to type it out. They yell it to me and then just type it into the computer. I had to do it within a certain amount of time and they love
Yeah,
it.
those type of quizzes are really interactive, I bet.
Gets them to speak and be a bit more vocal.
Have you ever taught privately, or has it only been through offline on platforms?
No, it's only been offline so far. In the future, I think when I've got more time, maybe over the summer and next year, I want to do online stuff. For the time being, it's only in schools. 2 hours a week. and then planning on top of it.
Most definitely, it is a bit of, you have time management to allocate those various projects. Do you have a favorite lesson you have taught in your classes?
Christmas traditions. That was really interesting. First lesson where I thought of it like front to back, I'd planned it all out properly, including games, everything that I wanted to have in there was in there, and it went so well. It was the first time that I saw all the different age groups, like even because I adapted it for different ages, like the 16-year-olds were getting involved and getting really excited. The 5-year-olds were getting really involved and really excited. Like, it was just nice to see something that I had come up with, like, actually be successful and like be received well. It was nice.
That's really fun that you have all the whole class to get involved in your favorite lesson about different Christmas traditions. And that helps when you have the class that you enjoy teaching and they just are full of life in that classroom. The students that are a bit not as robust in the classroom, how do you get them engaged in your classes?
I've stopped doing it now because I think they found it quite annoying. But I used to have a ball. And I would literally be like, you. And I'd throw the ball to them and be like, what do you think? And they'd be like,
they'll dodge it.
One teenager threw it back. It took them by surprise initially. And they were like, I guess I got an answer. And it gets them a little bit like, because, you know, sometimes when you say, what do you think? No one says anything. And you're like, okay, you. But I don't use that anymore just because I think, especially the older kids, they were like, and they didn't react well to it. So now what I do is, it's like a relay race, call out different names and be like, once I've asked them, just little sayings like, just try it, it's okay, little by little, even if it's wrong, say something, it's okay. Give them a little bit of extra.
That's wonderful. You're able to get your students that are not as, you know, robust, participating, engaging. And you, I love that philosophy, just try and engage and, you know, get them involved in some way, even if it's like a startled moment, just passing them a ball to get them speaking, as long as they're practicing their, yeah, improving their speech in class. Is it necessary, Ellie, to have a side hustle or an additional source of income while teaching English?
So far, I personally haven't, it hasn't been my experience that I've needed one, but just because where I'm living, like cost of living is quite low, and because of my hours, I think I'm working more hours than a normal like language assistant in Spain would be working. But so I've found it okay, but I think if you were living somewhere where it was a little bit more expensive, yeah, absolutely. And if you wanted to work towards other things as well after teaching, then yeah, definitely. I think side hustle, if you want to do your own personal development stuff as well as being a teacher, because like being a teacher is very much about other people and you're giving a lot of your energy to all the kids. So if you want something for your own personal progress or development, then yeah, I would say absolutely. If you wanted it for finance, then yeah, depends where you're living. I've been quite lucky. Yeah, where I'm living in Spain, the cost of living is incredibly low. I haven't needed to experience that yet.
A great perspective that you have highlighted, how it does depend on your location and more or less with you have your type of interests. What are some interesting side hustles that you've came across?
So out here, there's one girl who, she holds like a craft session in a bar downtown, and she'll do that once a week. And she's always inviting people. The majority of people that I know out here or that are doing English teaching, it's mainly teaching. There's one guy who wants to do bike tours. Okay. So like around the other local cities on the weekends, he can, you know, go out and some of the bigger cities or in the mountains and stuff like that. So yeah, there's all kinds of stuff.
That's really unique. Those are really some fun side hustles that the locals and that other teachers are trying to, you know, build their wealth in that way. What is the one common myth about your profession that you like to debunk, or that misconception that you like to highlight?
I think a lot of people assume that, number one, it's easy and that we're all just doing it for a free ride and to get to go to another country, and then, you know, we're just sort of slacking while we're out here. Not the case. It's very hard, and I think it's a little bit harder than I also anticipated. I think because of the stereotypes, I was like, oh, you know, just chat some English with some kids, it's fine, it's easy. No, not at all. Like, there's planning, there's techniques, you've got to develop yourself, and you've got to be very flexible. And also it's very hard communicating between two people when you don't speak the same language. So like getting your message across and making sure they understand it is, yeah, it's incredibly difficult. So I think there's that stereotype that is definitely.
Yeah, like any other profession, right? You have to do a lot of planning. You have to do a lot of training. You have to do many different techniques to get that traction with the audience that you're teaching or your work. That's great that you're highlighting those various stereotypes within this podcast. Do you have any preferences in teaching either adults or children in your classes? If so, why?
So the moments I'm teaching from age 3 up to age 16, but it's helped to narrow down the ages that I prefer. I'm definitely more of a primary school person, I think. My teaching style, I think, is more suited towards younger kids and less of teenagers who take themselves quite seriously. I don't really take myself that seriously. So, you know, it can either be well received by teenagers or they're like, what is she doing? It's either one of the two. So it's either great and they're fantastic and they're like, oh yeah, it's great. Or they're like, ugh, this woman again.
Right. Yeah. Cause you understand how nonchalant about things. Like, okay, well, that's good that you're not like those teachers that are very like helicopter or like strict. You know, you have a good like vibe to your teaching where it's calm ambiance in it.
These experiences in school, but I always remember teachers that were so just,
yes, very hardcore or just not very understanding or just like, you know, test and not very lenient.
Yeah, exactly. And just like more like stuff's gonna go wrong. Like I constantly have plans in my head and they just go left out the window or they don't receive it well. And like if I think something's gonna be amazing and they're like,
that's wonderful, that sort of different perspectives with your students. What do you love most about teaching the primary student?
Kids are still quite new to learning, so everything is quite exciting for them, so they're much more just receptive to information that you give them, and they're still finding everything exciting and they're much more free-spirited, a bit more joyous. And then you can see like as the years go on, the older kids are sort of, you know, they're being weighed down by more like, you know, exams. I think it's probably more the focus of schools actually rather than the kids. Like in secondary schools, it's always exams. Like all my kids, you know, we've got another exam. Oh, I'm really worried about it. So they themselves are weighed down. And I think I don't like being part of that way of teaching. Whereas, you know, in primary school, you don't really have that many exams and tests. So they're still just like, yeah, we're just learning for...
having fun with their learning.
Yeah, just to have fun. So I think that's more of the angle that I'm looking at from it.
Yeah, I definitely see that how the kids could be a little bit more a breath of fresh air, more or less. They don't have so many constraints, while the teenagers could be a bit more thinking about different pressures and life and, you know, deadlines to take their exams. So it could from different classroom environment.
Well, by the time that you're a teenager, you kind of know what you like and what you don't like. And if you know that you don't really want to speak English, then you're going to be like, why am I here? Which is fair enough. Not what they want to do. Me trying to ram English down their throat is not fun for them. It's not fun for me.
No, I could imagine that classroom would not be a very receptive class.
I don't need this, you know, I don't want to use it. So I'm here because I need to be. You're here because you need to be.
Oh, let's get this done.
Still a challenge, like don't get me wrong, they will get involved sometimes, but you can see it sort of like as a more reluctant kind of things, like, oh, if I have to kind of
get them from getting distracted and competing with their phones, you know, like social media and things like that.
That's one of the things I've been most surprised about. No one uses their phones in class, and I was really surprised by that, because when I was in school, we didn't have smartphones until we were like 17 18, and even then only one or two people had them. So we weren't really on our phones. Like once I would leave it at home, it has never been an issue. Like one time, one kid in my oldest class went to a corner of the room and like called some people over. Go, thank you. Been fine. That has not been an issue at all, which very surprising. I assumed that they would be like secretly trying to text each other. everyone that they know that they need to text is in that room.
But that's really good that they do have that friendship and forge a lot of friendships within their classroom where they don't need to have that obsession over devices. In America, it's very different. They're so bad. Certain cities where you have a mobile station to collect your cell phones, and then at the end of class day, they have to come back and collect it from that mobile station.
Wow. That it would be like that here as well, that it would be a really big phones here, you don't use them.
They have a more relaxed society over there, and it's more family oriented or more intuitive with each other. They're more interactive, engaging. They even have a time tree where they're sleeping. That's
yes. I did a lesson on stereotypes about Spanish people. No one brought it up, and I was like, why did you not speak about it? You never do it. You don't take naps in the day. We're in Britain, like, oh, that's, you got one thing right. They got very angry about that. Like, no, we don't take naps.
Those movies, they put it out there.
Shops and businesses take siestas, so they have a big old break in the middle of the day.
What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your teaching career?
How much planning would go into it? Obviously knew I would have to plan stuff and lesson plans, but I don't think I anticipated how much. It depends on the person. I like to know what I'm doing beforehand and have everything like laid out. I know some people can just show up and be like, have a topic and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. I assumed like, oh, a couple hours a week because of the sheer volume of the amount of classes that I have to do. Thinking of games, activities, new ways to present the information, make sure it gets into their brains.
Think of various like activities that they would be interested in. With the little kids, it's kind of easy.
Definitely. You can sort of like, here's a game. Although I tell you what, the teenagers, they absolutely love games and competitions. I've never seen be so competitive about like writing grammar. So I get them to do board races where they write like the most correct sentence or the best sentence. And honestly, I think two sentences were quite similar, and I was like, oh, which one is better? And they were like slagging each other off in the back, and they were like, yours is terrible, mine. I was like, guys, at least they cared. It's better than them like not trying. So no, it was funny seeing like all these so-called like cool moody teenagers be like, oh, my sentence is way
better. Yeah, that's really awesome to see just that type of engagement in your classroom. And also, do you provide any like prizes if they, whoever wins?
So I did that once at Christmas. So I said, oh, the winning team will get like, because I went back to England for Christmas. So I said, the winning team will get some chocolate from the UK. Well, I can't do this with every single class broke.
Yeah, that could get a bit expensive with shipping.
Again, we're doing a term by term competition. So I'll accumulate, they're in two teams for the whole term. Mm-hmm. I accumulate their points. Whoever has the most points at the end of the term gets a nice little bag of chocolate. I'll do it that way. Try and keep engaged for the whole
time. That's really great that you have incorporated some fun goodies. Yeah,
a little bit of bribery goes.
Being an English language teacher inspire you to learn a second language yourself, Ellie?
Yes. So mine's kind of the other way around. I wanted to learn Spanish. I've been wanting to learn Spanish, wanted to move to a Spanish speaking country so that I could actually immerse myself and properly learn it by, you know, constantly speaking it. Because, you know, doing 10 minutes on Duolingo every day is not. Speak to other people, you're using it all the time, you're surrounded by it. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it was sort of the other way around. Like I knew I wanted to learn Spanish, and then this was also a way of, I always wanted to learn a second language, but I always struggled because England doesn't really prioritize speaking a second language because everyone speaks English is the attitude that we have. So, or be a part of, or at least help out someone else trying to learn a second language in a way that I would have wanted when I was younger. Because it was all very much like read from the book and da 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 da, and it wasn't very
available at that time.
Yeah, and not very useful. Help someone else learn a different language.
How you have had that motivation to help someone else. Emily thought that one can teach English remotely online from anywhere in the world, thus allowing for a nomadic lifestyle. Has that been your experience, Ellie?
Not so far, because I am very new to this. I can see how it could be, especially if you build up enough of like following online different clients and different things, if schools or anything like that, then I can see how. There's a new, is it digital working visa that they've introduced now? You can move to a whole bunch of different countries, stay there for 6 months. You don't need to register with tax or anything, and you can work there digitally for like 6 months. So yeah, I can see how things like that. And if you're working online, you could do whatever you want to go over where you wanted.
Yeah, that's really cool that with online teaching, you could definitely travel wherever and definitely, you know, have a career remotely and nomadically. How did you get started as an English language teacher?
Actually, lockdowns and COVID kind of kicked it all off for me. So in the first lockdown in the UK, like everyone, I'm sure, I had a complete existential crisis because we were all locked down in our houses, we couldn't do anything. And I started to think of all these things where I was like, oh God, I never did this. And the thing that was most prominent in my head was like, I've never lived abroad. I've never lived anywhere else other than London. And that's something I've always wanted to do. And I was in a job at the time that I didn't particularly like. I was quite miserable there. And again, teaching has always been something that I wanted to test out and to see if I want to fully commit to it as a full career later down the line. And I just thought, well, the two together. And then actually, so Antonia, I think we met up at a friend's dinner one day. And she said, yeah, I'm doing my TEFL course. I'm going to move to Spain. And I remember hearing that and thinking, oh, I want to do that. She was my final motivation. And I think literally, about a month later, I booked my TEFL course and started to do it and then started to apply for places in Spain as well. So she was my final.
Motivation or just like a realization you need to go. That's really wonderful to have like those type of inspirations and that motivation from when you were younger, insight to want to teach from just very young and help someone improve on their English. What cultural norms did you learn while teaching your students in your classroom?
I think this question is interesting because I think I haven't really come across in the classrooms anyway, I haven't come across that many sort of cultural norms that I need to be sort of mindful or aware of. I think two things that definitely surprised me was, again, I don't know how different it is elsewhere, or for example in the US, the kids, regardless of how old they are, will stay in one classroom all day, and you know, they don't move around to different classrooms, so they're literally in the same seat for what, 7 hours a day, 6 hours a day. That's very different to the UK. Like, we'll go to different classrooms and we'll move around, so we're, you know, getting a bit more
energy.
And that was quite a big thing. So my classes at the end of the day, you can definitely see that they're just sort of like, I've been in a room all day. Yes, restless energy, that's it. Is that a thing in the US?
Yes, the little ones, they do stay in the class for a whole time in one classroom. And they also have like a time when they do have recess, where they go outside and play and then they come back.
You know, in primary school, we're in one room.
Teenagers, they stay in one classroom the whole time.
Yeah, they stay in one classroom as well. So they get incredibly restless towards the end of the day. So
yeah, interesting. Over here in the US, the teenagers, they're moving. They're always in like homeroom, English, science, various subjects they go to. So I could imagine students could be a bit antsy.
English at the end of the day. Again, another one, they don't have lunch until the end of the day. So they will sort of like have all of their classes in one go, maybe have like a half an hour break during the day. Yeah, they'll have lunch after they finish the school day. Quite an intense day, to be fair, because they don't have that lunch break that we normally do and then finish at 3. They finish at 2 and then have their lunch break afterwards.
Oh, okay. So they have shorter days.
Yeah, so we have shorter days as a teacher. I'm still trying to figure out if it's better or not. I think they need more breaks from actual like learning and stuff. Yeah, more time away from having information. Kind of remove that, you know, the post-lunch like sleepiness. That's not a thing. You don't have kids like falling asleep. Again, much more exam focused than the UK. Well, in a different way. So in the UK, we have exams at the end of the year. Every other week, the kids are like, oh, I've got an exam. Oh, exam. I think they have them more frequently throughout the year. So again, I don't know which is better, having loads of little ones throughout the year or one like massive. It's very, very exam focused.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on the students. Yeah, that's a lot to put on a teenager, especially if they're learning in class and they're already learning information from their teacher and then having to do exams. It could be a bit of a learning curve, but they'll definitely find happy medium within all of that. What are your plans for 2022 that you care to share with audience?
Plans for 2022. So my personal one is get my Spanish up. So I want to be not fluent, but I just want to be better by the end of 2022. In teaching, stay here for another year, stay in Spain. But I need to think about, do I want to go to the region? Do I want to try a different school? Yeah, those are my main goals. I'm living in Spain, but at the moment, because lesson planning and getting used to schools and routines and stuff has taken up all of my time, I'm not fully living in Spain yet. I need to do more things. I need to like use my afternoons better and explore more places. Go out to a couple of bars occasionally. Taught a lesson about veganism, because in the UK we have a month called Veganuary where you do like quite a new thing. I only started in 2014, but it's a challenge to see if you can be vegan for 1 month as a way to ease you in and show you like, oh, well, you know, it's easier than you think. And yeah, I think 500,000 people like officially signed up to it, and obviously like more probably did it at home and stuff like that. So I was teaching them about it. It's January and I said, and a lot of them said that they have never met anyone who is a vegan. All their information was based on stereotypes and, you know, only things that they've seen in the media or things, you know, maybe their parents have said because not spoken about or understood. So yeah, it might be interesting to get them to speak.
Teach them and educate them about this lifestyle. And especially from someone that is living that lifestyle, I would love to share my insights and provide some fun ways into it, because the stereotypes could be a bit for them to dive into that.
If people want to find me, I do have a LinkedIn. Again, okay, it's very basic. So my LinkedIn is Ella Acues Holgate.
Thank you so much, Ellie. It was such a pleasure and a joy to converse with you about your various experience with teaching and joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a good conversation.
That was an end to another show. Please visit the website at www.teachingonlineenglish.com for the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get notifications of the next show. Talk with you soon.